lot of us, probably about 80%, rely on waking up with an alarm clock, which means that these 80% potentially cut short their sleep.
Sleep is always about patterns and rhythms and harmony. And being aligned to patterns and rhythms, harmony, that's one of the key factors.
We think of sleep as the thing we do when we're in bed, but actually, our sleep is affected by things we do from the moment we wake up. How do our daytime activities affect our night's sleep? How should we eat, exercise, and meditate? What should we avoid when we know we need a really good night's sleep? I'm Chris Chambers, and this is The Art of Sleep, an original podcast series by Rituals. We'll be taking you deep into the world of sleep and everything that's connected to it, from body clocks to the perfect bedroom and the science of rest. Our busy, hectic lifestyles mean that we don't always carve out a moment of rest and relaxation, or optimize our days for a better rest at night. So, what does a perfect day look like? Dagmar Brusser is the creative director at Rituals, and she'll be joining me while we unravel sleep and all of its mysteries. Do you actually snatch moments of rest during the day?
Yeah, I have to really pay attention to that. Most of the time when I feel also overwhelmed in between meetings, that you want just a little break, what I do then often is I just step outside for even if it's only 5 minutes, take a small walk around the block or sit on a bench in the sun. You know what, for me is also a very nice way to relax is I have a drive home, which takes normally an hour. That 1 hour that I can sort of go through the whole day again, it's a moment of meditation, driving in a car. So we all have our own ways, yeah, to find that moment to release, pressure.
Yeah, that's important, isn't it? Everybody has to, and I think that's what's going to come out during the course of this episode, that everyone has to find their own routine, everyone has to find their own way. Okay, well, let's break down the perfect day from the time we wake up until the time we go to bed and look at how the contents of our days can help us rest better at night. And the person who's going to help us do that is Dr. Katarina Ledele. She's a sleep scientist and chronobiologist. Part of what she studies are chronotypes, which are essentially the different types of body clocks we all have. You know, whether you're a morning person or a night owl.
When we wake up, there is no one time fits all. We all have our own chronotype. Some of us are more early, some of us are more late, and the rest of us are somewhere in the middle.
But no matter what type of chronotype we are, there's something even more important that we need to realize.
What you do during the day is immensely important for your sleep at night, because day and night, they go together. And in the same way, wake and sleep go together and follow one another and proceed, it all contributes. And often we are not aware how our little behaviors, how our lifestyle, our little habits, how they all can affect our nighttime sleep in a positive, but also in a negative way.
So let's start with the moment we open our eyes.
Regular light exposure, and probably in particular in the morning, is immensely important to keep our body clock aligned with the outside world. It's also important for alertness and for our mood. When the clock knows now it is daytime, it will then also push for certain processes, the appropriate processes that should be taking place through the active phase, the daylight phase. And equally then when it gets dark, the clock also know, okay, now it is nighttime and now I can push for rest, and it will introduce or coordinate all the processes needed for rest and good sleep.
Light, in a sense, wakes our body clock up and tells us to get going, which is all well and good if you're a morning person, but what if you're not?
It's important to find out what is our natural wake-up time. A lot of us, probably about 80%, rely on waking up with an alarm clock. which means that these 80% potentially cut short their sleep. So the best way to find out what your natural wake-up time is, and related to that, your chronotype and also your bedtime or falling asleep time, is taking 5 or 6 days holiday and then go to bed as and when you feel tired and get up when you wake up feeling refreshed in the morning. And it's likely that it will take you about 5 nights to find out what your chronotype is, because a lot of us are not getting enough sleep. Certainly during the week. And so there's the sleep that we're building up, and you kind of need to repay some of that before you find out or can find out what your natural rhythm is, your natural timing. Once you know what your wake-up time is, and even if that is with the alarm clock, keep that as regular as you can between the week and the weekend.
So regularity is important for the body clock. But why? Well, because it sets the timing for everything that happens in our bodies.
It can start to expect when the light's coming up. So it will then start internal processes in the body to get you ready or be ready before you wake up. If we keep changing our wake-up times, the clock will get confused and doesn't know when do I need to start. That leads to confusion internally, which can then have a negative impact on health and well-being.
And the first thing we do after we wake up is also important.
What I recommend to, particularly to my clients, is when you wake up, a moment of maybe reflection or just acknowledging, hey, I've just slept. I've got a new day ahead of me. And then also maybe setting a bit of an intention around what do I want this day to be about? Setting something up that you want to do that's of value to yourself, so that at the end of the day, you can sort of go to bed and say, yep, I have done something for myself, and that can then lead to a sense of gratitude and fulfillment.
So starting the day in a relaxed way and with clearly set out intentions is very important, particularly if you lead a busy life. It helps you to gauge the importance of the things you're doing. Dagmar, are you relaxed in the morning?
I do take my time, because I can't actively sort of start in an active mode instantly, jump out of bed, and then here I am. I do have to say, I'm always in a good mood in the morning, as long as you leave me alone for a bit. I just need that moment of nothingness. And then, you know, by the time, maybe it's that your brain wakes up, by the time after 15 minutes I'm done and I take a shower and I'm ready, you know, to face the day more actively.
Well, it turns out that we actually need quite a bit of that relaxed time in the morning. And Dr. Lederle isn't the only one who thinks so.
I think we've got into a habit of sort of climbing out of bed and rushing to work. But you need to give yourself something like 90 minutes to allow the light to get into you. And my name is Nick Littlehales. I'm an elite sports sleep coach.
Nick started his sleep coaching with football clubs like Manchester United and Arsenal and Chelsea. And he's written a book called, well, Sleep. And now he works with all kinds of professions.
NFL and NBA, Olympic athletes all over the world, rowers, netball, you know, poker players, e-sporters, snowboarders. I think just the general demands of modern life means that any individual, whether it's elite sport or not, has got to sort of redefine their approach. I've been working with nurses and doctors and hospitals and universities and police forces and fire services across the globe, and students. You know, so it really doesn't matter who you are. It's applies to everybody. So we've changed the mindset about worrying what happens when we're asleep and just looking at what we're doing from the point of wake.
It sounds a bit counterintuitive, but focusing on how you wake up will help you sleep better.
What we focus on in any particular routine when we're planning something out is the first 90 minutes of your day. It's all about how much time you allow yourself to just move from a hibernating, you know, 6, 7, 8 hours doing nothing in a sleep state, almost in a semi-paralyzed deep sleep state, and then suddenly to become, oh, active like that when you don't know the process. So it really, really helps if people just give themselves extra time, particularly in the morning, because that reveals the best recovery for the rest of the day.
And for Nick, that does not involve the phone.
Even before you get to the toilet to empty your bladder, we're flicking through notifications. And it doesn't matter how much you block it. There's still things coming in from friends and relatives and this, and Donald Trump's done that, and there's a flood here, and, all sorts of things.
I think we all secretly know that it's best not to have phones in our bedroom at all. When we pick up our phones first thing in the morning before we've even splashed some water on our faces or had a glass of juice, we become exhausted before our day's even started. Nick is doing some experiments with two different groups. One who receive and look at notifications on their phones right away, and one that delays looking at their phone by 20 minutes or so.
The one group are interacting with it, and the other group are going, yeah, that was funny, but it's fine. Yeah, that's great, but it doesn't really impact me. That's interesting, I'll save it. Their whole reaction to the information was so significantly different in that first 90 minutes. If you create yourself some more space, it means you're not so much under pressure, and you will notice a big difference. Because if something comes into my world in that first 20 minutes from point of wake, it could be with me for the rest of the day. Concentrate on getting yourself aligned with the light, hydration, all those things, so that you are at least functioning as a human being before you start looking at it.
So, make your lunch, iron your shirt, look at your to-do list, then look at your phone.
It just gets the brain processing information in a nice, gentle, because it's been shut down. You've not been drinking, you've not been fueling up, you've not been moving around. So it just needs to be almost like shook up, woken up, but not scared. Create that sort of process. And now, we're starting to come back into the world.
I don't know about you, but I actually look forward to breakfast every morning, and I take my time. The hum of the juicer, the squeal of the kettle, the smell of the coffee. They say it's the most important meal of the day, and that's not just to get your body and mind going. Eating breakfast also helps you sleep well, because again, it's all about routine.
Try and get a regular time in for your breakfast. That doesn't mean it has to be bang on 7 o'clock every morning. It could be 7, 7:15, maybe even 7:30, but within maybe sort of a half an hour of a time window. At the same time, it seems to be beneficial to not eat immediately after getting out of bed, sort of maybe giving yourself an hour between getting up and then having your breakfast. And it comes back to the regularity that we spoke about before, about regularity around sleep times, wake-up times, and light exposure. And meal times are another way of helping your clock to stick on a 24-hour rhythm.
And who better to ask about exercise than, of course, a sports sleep coach?
But exercise at any level creates this whole lovely natural process throughout our day, these circadian rhythms, balance and rhythm. It raises heart rate, it creates all sorts of things. It involves the digestive systems, thought processes. We tend to manage information well when we're doing exercise. It creates different hormones and all sorts of stuff. So it's not just about being fit. And I think, creating the space in your day to do at least some sort of level of exercise is really, really important to your overall approach.
And when you should do it depends on whether you're a morning person, a night owl, or something in between.
So when you look at the circadian rhythms of the day and the chronotype, you can actually see that there's certain parts of the day where you will get more productivity from your exercise if you're doing certain things at the right time of the day. So for a morning person like me, high-intensity exercise, I'll get more benefits from it in the first phase of the day, up until midday. Once we move into the back half of the day, it should be more like walking and riding bikes and swimming. But for the nighttime chronotype, it could be the other way around.
Now, there is something else we should also incorporate into our days in the name of a better sleep at night, a modern form of the coveted nap.
So our day is often sort of fast-paced with, you know, doing three things at the same time, and you start the next thing while you're still doing the other thing. And there's this idea that, oh yeah, when I come home, then I'll have my wind-down routine or wind-down habits. And if we only wait until the evening to reduce and let go of all that stress, often that can't happen. So what I suggest is to take little mini breaks throughout the day. And that could be after a sort of very big task at work, or maybe even before you embark on another big task, to help, in one way, lower stress levels, but it can also help to sort of refocus the mind on the task at hand or the next thing you want to do.
We all like to decompress in the evening, but taking little breaks during the day to gather one's thoughts or reflect can make that a little less necessary. And Nick agrees.
You know, we've seen a lot of developments with sleep pods and recovery rooms and, you know, napsercise classes at gyms. It's not a nap. It actually is a mental and physical recovery period. We call them controlled recovery periods. And it's just a little bit of vacant mind space. But if you do it at the right time of day, like midday or early evening, just take 30 minutes out, you know. Just chill out. You know, anybody knows if you wander down to the river or the coast or the park and you just sit there for a few minutes outside, the world doesn't seem that bad a place anymore, you know? It could be just visualization, it could be sensory, it could be something that just allows you to take some space. And it could be a little bit of meditation. And what you understand is if you create that little space at the right time of the day, then it's adding to your overall recovery approach, which is really key. They're really, really powerful. They really protect you from all the other demands of sleeping without benefits. And they're one of the amazing tools.
At last, we've reached the end of our perfect day. We've done everything we should, woken up at the same time we always do, let some light in, not looked at our phones right away. We had a proper breakfast, exercised a bit and taken a couple of mini breaks during our workday, and we're feeling pretty good about ourselves. But what now? Can we reward ourselves with, say, a beer or a glass of wine with dinner?
So alcohol does two things. On the one hand, it can help us to fall asleep, but then it disturbs the second half of your night, it disrupts it, which probably leads to much lighter sleep, less REM or rapid eye movement sleep. And REM sleep seems to be important for the processing of our emotional experiences of the day.
Okay, well, maybe just a little nip then, you know, to take the edge off, to detach from the to-do list we took home with us from work.
Now, what's important for sleep, but generally well-being, is to switch off. Something that can help is to find an activity that you really enjoy and that really absorbs you and therefore your attention and your focus. So maybe learning a new language or learning to dance or whatever it may be that can help to switch off and switch over to something else.
It creates a period where you become human and you basically try and shut yourself down. And that is just to leave those things behind. So you can still be active, but you're doing things that you don't do normally throughout your day. Take the pressure off the evening so that you've got a bit more time like we do in the morning. That it does create that space between finishing everything off and when you actually plan to sleep.
Nick says that can increase the chance you'll have a deep sleep by up to 60%. And in that last hour before you go to bed, avoid mental stimulation altogether.
The conflict a lot of people have is that they're rushing around in the evenings. They've woken up in the morning, they're not taking these breaks, they've not grabbed their little 30 minutes, they're under pressure, fatigue's building, over-caffeinating, all that sort of stuff, rush to the gym, now I've got to eat, don't eat too late. Then I've got to do this, then I've got to, oh my God, there's only, you know, it's nearly this, and I've only got to get up and do it again. And then suddenly they just go, well, I'm going to get into bed and sleep. and they'll either crash and then wake up later, or they'll struggle.
So ideally, in the hour before bedtime, dim the lights and sort of engage in non-stimulating activity. Pack your lunch, get ready what you want to wear. It's one decision less to make in the next morning.
Well, this all sounds a little bit Puritan, doesn't it? I mean, eat right, exercise, no alcohol, stick to your routines. What if just one night I want to go out and have some fun?
So having sort of a regular bedtime or regular sleep time doesn't mean it has to happen every night or every evening, because we want to live our lives. And sometimes we have long working hours, or sometimes we go to the theatre or the cinema, or, you know, going out with our friends. So having the occasional late night, I think, is absolutely fine. But it's about the balance, getting the balance right. Just try and go to bed half an hour earlier the next night, and maybe the night after that, to pay back a sleep debt, and then get back into your regular routine.
Okay, so there is room for play. But actually, that very last part of our perfect day is preparing our mind and body for rest.
So there's always this nice relationship in this sensory way of just creating a nice environment around you as best you can that helps the brain go, we're okay, aren't we? Yep, cool, right. Should we go deep diving into that deep sleep then? Yeah, I think we're fine. Curtains closed, windows locked. Everything sounds all right outside. No more bowel and bladder. Seems to have got rid of all those thoughts. Got the right hormones going on. I think we're all cool, aren't we? I think so. Right, let's go for it then. All of these little things are so easy. They're just practical, natural things. And if you just sort of go, oh, if I help my brain, it'll help me. Bingo, start doing it tomorrow.
Dagmar Brusser is still here in the studio with me. Dagmar, I think the most surprising thing for me out of all of that was the idea of these mini breaks, taking that time out just for yourself. What do you think about that? Is that something you think you could or do incorporate into your day?
If you have a lot on your plate, it's easy to think, let me do this first and then I'll take a break. And then by the end of the day, you haven't taken a break. You might even have skipped lunch. Yeah, it does happen to me. And then I end up having drunk like 8 cappuccinos in a day, no food. So yeah, absolutely. I need to take time to take lunch. I think those are things that I can really improve.
What seems to be important with this is that you actually make a conscious effort to do it.
Absolutely true. So that's maybe my major point of improvement, is to install conscious moments into my day. Yeah, I'm definitely going to focus on that.
Well, once we've got the hang of things before we go to bed, we'll need to take a close look at the sanctuaries we call our bedrooms for creating the perfect space for a good night's sleep.
Learn from children. Children don't go to bed and think, oh, I'm a terrible sleeper. This is something we as adults sort of bring to the bedroom.
Your bedroom is incredibly important in terms of helping you to get a good night's sleep. So as human beings, we're still dealing with the fact that we have a sort of caveman physiology. And what this means is that our physiology is kind of set up such that, you know, if we don't feel safe on some level, we won't sleep.
And that's exactly what we'll be talking about in the next episode. Thanks for listening to this podcast brought to you by Rituals. Learn more about how sleep and relaxing enriches your day at rituals.com/podcast.